You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have some great guests to talk about the first half. We also preview the Home Run Derby. We have MLB.com's Richard Justice, Tampa Bay Times beat writer Mark Tompkin, and MLB.com's Ken Gernick. We start with Justice, who expects the Home Run Derby to be a lot of fun. Enjoy the podcast.
We have Richard Justice on the phone. He's from MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Bill.
Richard, this could be one of the best home run derbies ever. I mean, you have Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Bellinger. I mean, what sticks out to me is that this group is young. What do you think about this derby?
Yeah, I think you're right in that those three represent where the game is going. I think I looked in the top 20 in home run hitters the other day, or the top 10. The average age was 26 years old. The leaders are two rookies, Judge and Bellinger. And Bill, it's just the way the game is going. Began with Albert Pujols. The Cardinals said, forget AA, forget AAA. We're just going to bring him up. His talent is so extraordinary. And teams have just said, okay, we're going to invest. We're going to invest in our guys' talent. We think they'll survive. You saw it there in Washington with Bryce Harper. And the Home Run Derby always provides – it's an amazing show because it's not just talent and strength and precision. It's just the sheer stamina to go through the thing. And the things we've seen with Todd Frazier and Josh Hamilton and Jock Peterson, Yoenis Cespedes, it's just been a great, great show. And in Stanton, I saw Stanton said the other day that he looks like Aaron Judge is my evil twin or some reference because they're so bigger than life. And the way Bellinger's hitting home runs, he deserved to be included in that, although he's not quite as big as those guys. So you're going to have guys that look the part, you know.
You know, I'm picking Bellinger to win the contest. I think the guy is just so amazing. Why do you think he's thrived at such a young age?
I think one is, like we were talking about, I think he's Cody Bellinger. He just, you know, the Dodgers have sort of known with these two guys, Corey Seager and Cody Bellinger, that they had two special guys. They were saying 2-3 years ago before either one of them had set foot in the big leagues, these are going to be top five guys. And what's so amazing about both of them is they've both been getting a lot of off-speed pitches. Bellinger gets a lot of off-speed pitches. He got an infield hit last night. I just think he's just gifted. You know, sometimes guys are every bit as good as they're supposed to be. And when you get a reputation, you're only going to get maybe one hittable pitch per at bat. And he's not missing that pitch. And it'll be interesting to see how teams adjust to him. Because how do you adjust? Because you got to face Justin Turner. You got to face Seager. You know, Puig has been pretty darn good, too. The Dodgers are I guess that's the reason they're 56-29. They got a cool thing going.
This will be the first time since 2002 the All-Star game will not be determined home field advantage. How do you feel about that?
I don't think it'll make any difference in the way they play or the way managers use players. I think they want to get as many in there as possible. And I think even though it doesn't decide home field advantage in the World Series, it is a showcase for players. And players, I don't care. You see it every day, Bill, when you're in a clubhouse. Those guys, whether they're playing video games or pop a shot or whatever, you put guys, people like this, in a competitive environment, and A, they want to do well, and B, they want to win. I was asking George Springer about it the other day, you know, that very question, hey, this doesn't decide anything. And he goes, you're going to want to go out there and compete. And there's so many young guys on there, first and second All-Star, almost half the team, probably end up being half the team by the time we get there,
right,
that it's guys that want the country to know who they are.
Is there anyone you feel that was snubbed in the All-Star game?
Yeah. You know, that's the problem. I feel so many guys that were deserving. Alex Wood of the Dodgers. You know, the final man ballot will take care of some of that. Hopefully that gets Justin Turner in. That's the one of the glaring ones. But just because I've been paying a lot of attention to the Dodgers here in Houston, Texas, my guy Chris Davinsky, who leads all Major League relievers in innings, and in strikeouts, and it's basically at a time when the Astros had four starting pitchers on the disabled list. He's one of the guys that pretty much saved their butts, and I would like to see him there. And even a guy, you know, a guy like Marwin Gonzalez, who's started 10-plus games at like four or five different positions, to me, he's deserving. Logan Morrison of the Rays is deserving. So, you know, and Chris Bryant, of course, I forgot to mention him. Even in a year when he's not Superman, he's really good. So I guess it's a good thing that we're not going to be able to take care of all the good players. By the time we get to Florida, virtually all of the deserving players will be there. And that's the point of the whole thing.
As we reach the All-Star break, Richard, talk about the biggest surprises, in your opinion.
Oh, I think Arizona. You know, okay, as we're recording this, Milwaukee has a 3.5 game lead in the NL Central.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the weird thing about that is they thought they were good. I don't know that the rest of us knew how good they were going to be. And now you look going forward, they have these young pitchers and Jimmy Nelson and Chase Anderson and Junior Guerrero. That's like, whoa, this rotation can play with anybody in that division. The Cubs may have their hands full. And this guy, Eric Thames, comes back. From Japan, Korea, and completely remakes his swing.
Over 20 homers.
Get Travis Shaw to play third base from the Red Sox. David Stearns, the general manager there, has done a phenomenal job. But the Twins being in contention, the Twins are a game and a half out of first place at this point. The Diamondbacks and Rockies have both spent a lot of time in first base and are right now would go to the postseason since the season ended. I think it's more a reflection of the state of the game. Mm-hmm. In that, in spring training, 25, 26 teams, they have a reasonable path to the postseason. I think that's important to note. And so when it happens, I don't think we should be surprised, but it is fun to watch.
What are you looking forward to during the second half?
I'm looking forward to seeing how these races evolve. That one of the things would be, are the White, you know, okay, Atlanta is coming on. Atlanta has some young pitchers. They're going to get more young pitchers. They got Freddie Freeman back. All right, they trail by 9 games. They trail the Nationals by 9 games. They were trailing by 12.5. Can they make a run? I mean, they think they can make a run. And just to see how it all plays out, does Kansas City, I think Dayton Moore is going to keep the band together for one last run. Can Kansas City catch Cleveland in the AL Central? So, you know, that's what I love about it now. There's like a dozen different plot lines that are all pretty fascinating.
You know, the trade deadline's coming up. What do you expect to see? Who do you expect to be traded?
I expect the Giants to offer Johnny Cueto around. I mean, that's
one.
I expect the Tigers to listen on Justin Verlander and probably trade J.D. Martinez. Justin Verlander may be the most interesting guy because he's got 2 years at $56 million left on his contract. Will somebody take that? Would Justin agree to go to be in a? I would, knowing the guy a little bit, I would imagine that he would. You know, the chance to be in a pennant race, and just see what the Toronto Blue Jays do if they're going to just blow it up the way I think the standings say they probably should blow it up. They're 10.5 out today, and it's going to be, I think, a seller's market because there are so many teams looking for the same things: starting pitching. Nationals looking for a closer, and everybody looking for a relief help, bench help, all this stuff. There's not a lot of teams aren't going to be able to make the moves they like to make, so that leads to a competitive bidding market.
Do you think the Nationals will get that closer?
Bill, it makes no sense to me. David Robertson of the White Sox is available.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Nationals don't see him as perfect. Maybe they see him as breaking the budget they had lined up. They've been a great organization for 6 years. I think they're top three in wins, but they haven't won a postseason series. And I think, I don't know how you feel about it, but all those other arms they have, Blanton, and who knows when Sean Kelly's going to pitch again, Cota Glover and Ollie Perez and all those guys. I think it looks, if you get the ninth inning nailed down, you suddenly will have some stability before that. I think we've seen it in Colorado with the presence that Greg Holland has made being there. I can't imagine that Mike Rizzo wouldn't be allowed to go out and get a closer, but I'm not in charge there.
Right, right. Totally. You know, Richard, something we haven't heard in a while, we haven't heard about managers on the firing lines. Do you see any managers in trouble?
I would wonder about Mike Matheny. That mm-hmm. would be one name that would come up. I would wonder about John Gibbons in Toronto mm-hmm. and Brad Ausmus in Detroit. Those are the three, I think, might be a little shaky. Not in this order. I think Ausmus and Gibbons are not going to survive till next opening day.
No kidding.
Mike Matheny has a track record.
Right.
First 4 years on that job, I believe he won more games than any manager in the National League. Now, St. Louis is a tough place to manage. They, you know, every game's a playoff game there, every game's a World Series, and they second-guess everything the poor guy does. So, you know, them missing the playoffs by two years in a row, it's the team. I think they understand it's the team. But sometimes you'd make a change, even when you know it's probably not the right thing to do, just to change the voice, change the narrative, whatever.
Do you see the Nationals re-signing Dusty Baker? His contract is up after this year. Do you see him getting
Mike
another
Rizzo's
chance?
Is contract up also? Yeah, I don't know why Dusty hasn't been taken care of. You know, the Nationals have their own way of doing things.
Correct.
And you were there when Matt Williams was there.
Correct.
I love Matt Williams. But you bring somebody in with Dusty's resume and track record, and also the fact that he's an older person and he's seen everything and done everything there has been to do in the game, nothing is going to rattle Dusty. And that calmness and that poise and that resume is what they needed. You can go get another manager. You know, people in Anaheim, every time the Angels lose three in a row, they want to fire Socia. I said, that's fine. You can go fire him. You're not getting anybody better than Mike Socia. So I can't imagine Dusty wouldn't be managing there next year. But as you know the learners better than I do. They sort of have their own timetable for doing things, and they've been pretty successful doing it their way.
That's true. Richard Justice, listen, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll talk to you later.
My next guest is Mark Tompkin of the Tampa Bay Times. He explains why the Rays are suddenly wild card contenders. Enjoy the podcast.
On the phone, I have one of the best beat writers in baseball. His name is Mark Tompkin. He covers the Tampa Rays. Thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem, Bill. Anytime.
I'm going to be honest with you, Mark. I did not expect the Tampa Bay Rays to be contenders this year. And before you know it, they're in playoff contention. And how impressed are you about this team?
Well, I think it's been a little bit surprising where they are, that they're in the race, as you say, and you know they're heading to the All-Star break and pretty much holding one of the wild card spots. And certainly within sight in the division race, there's been a couple things that have gone right for them, a couple things they've navigated. They've been without some of their key players, and that's probably the biggest surprising part. If you were to tell me going into the season they would have gotten to the halfway point without Brad Boxberger throwing a pitch, without Matt Duffy playing in one game, those were two guys that were supposed to be a really big part of what they did, and neither one of those guys played. So that's probably the most surprising part to me, that they've done it by working around some of their key absences and without a great year from Evan Longoria.
And you know what's interesting to me, it seems like the front office is doing a great job in terms of trades, some free agent signings, and the farm system as well. Could you talk about the job the front office has done this year?
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously turnover in the front office. I mean, much of the attention was on Joe Maddon leaving the Rays after the 2014 season, but Andrew Friedman, he actually left first. I mean, that was the reason Maddon was able to use his escape clause in his contract, and Andrew Friedman was the GM and the architect of those teams that played so well and made the playoffs four times in 6 years. So when he left, a lot of the same guys were still here. They reorganized their department a little bit, and I think they kind of took it as a task to prove that, you know, they could still get a team that could be contending team also. And the first couple of years were a little rough, so they were a little more aggressive, I think, this offseason. They made some more moves. They tried to find, it was a very narrow thing they were trying to do. They were trying to find guys that would improve their offense without hurting their defense or without having to take away from their pitching staff. I mean, they made some trades. We saw them trade Matt Moore at the end of last year. We saw them trade Drew Smyly this offseason. But they're able to keep, you know, they have enough depth. They keep the core of that rotation intact, and they've been filling in. And we've seen them adjust on the fly, Bill, and that's probably been the most impressive part. I mean, you know, they found out Boxberger got hurt early in spring training, and Tommy Hunter gets signed and Jumbo Diaz gets claimed on waivers, and those guys have played a fairly key part for them. And Xavier Cedeno got hurt, and we've seen them try a couple things. They brought up a kid from AA, which they rarely ever do, Jose Alvarado, to be a lefty out of the pen. And that worked for a couple weeks or a month or so, and then he kind of started needing some help, and then they went and sent him down. They tried another guy they had in the farm system, Adam Kolarik. So we've seen them be resourceful in that regard. But the bigger move, and I think the one that, you know, got the attention of a lot of the players, was realizing Duffy wasn't really going to be playing, at least for a while, and maybe into late into the season. They still expect him back at some point, but they went out last week and traded for a really good frontline shortstop in Adany Echevarria from the Marlins.
Yes.
And, you know, it was only taking on about $2.25 million, $2.35 million, which, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot for some teams, but for the Rays, they rarely do that in season. And a lot of the players in the clubhouse were really kind of energized and excited by that, and took that as a sign that the front office was willing to, and they hope will continue to make moves to help them in filling whatever holes they have to make a run this year.
Now, Mark, everyone knows about the Evan Longorias of the world and the Chris Archers of the world, but the Rays have some players on this roster that makes you say, whoa, these guys can play. And I want to start with Steven Souza Jr. Now, I covered him in Washington, and this guy has a much better swing than he had in Washington. He looks more selective now. Could you talk about him?
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that obviously, you know, they made a big trade for, and it was part of a, you know, a couple of deals, and it all kind of came together. But in essence, the Rays, you know, got him to replace Will Myers, and, you know, factually, though, if you tracked where the trade went, they gave up Trey Turner to get Steven Souza Jr. They got him from the Padres and passed him on to the Nationals. So, you know, Steven Souza Jr. in a way bears a big burden. There were obviously many other players involved in those deals, but, you know, there's a burden of knowing that you were supposed to replace Will Myers and they gave up a talent like Trey Turner to get you. But I think what Steven Souza Jr. has done is you've seen him, exactly as you said, get more mature as a hitter. He's a very excitable player, and that's a positive and a negative. We kind of been using this phrase, Souza-palooza, because a little bit of everything when he plays. And, you know, even just in yesterday's game alone, you saw him try to make what would have been an incredible leaping catch. Then the ball just actually bounces out of his glove, so then he costs the team a run because the guy ends up with a triple and then scores on a base hit. Then the next inning, basically make up for that run all by himself with a bunt single, steal second, goes to third on an errant throw, and good hustle job tagging up on a fly ball. And then, you know, later in the game, a two-run double. So he's got a lot of talent. He can do a lot of things. He is very much multi-talented. It's a question of him putting it together, a question of him not trying to do too much, not trying too hard, and being that player, you know, that frontline player the Rays thought that he could be when they got him from the Nationals.
And what about Logan Morrison? I look at his power, and I go, whoa. I mean, that power against the Orioles was unbelievable. Talk about him.
Yeah, 24 homers to this point for Logan Morrison. And that was an interesting decision, Bill, because the Rays got him last year in the trade with the Mariners, and he had a miserable first part of the season. I mean, literally no RBIs or home runs till like May 13th or May 17th, mid-May, before he got on the board with either. And, you know, just maintained his professionalism, maintained his stoicism, maintained his confidence somehow, which really was admirable and he should be lauded for. Then he had a really good 4 months. He had a couple weeks there where he was a little injured, but overall, pretty good 4 months. Then at the end of the year, he had to shut it down with a wrist injury, required surgery. So 4 good months and 2 pretty bad months framing it. And the Rays, you know, he sat out on the free agent market, and the Rays had a lot of choices. There were a lot of first base, a lot of DH types available this offseason. I mean, Mike Napoli comes to mind, Chris Carter comes to mind. There were several others, Mark Reynolds. Some have worked out better than others where they ended up signing. But the Rays had all his options, and then they ended up coming back to Logan Morrison early in February. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, he probably was looking at a minor league invite if he didn't get that offer from the Rays, and kind of got him at a bargain rate, $2.5 million, and said, we'll give you the chance to play. And he has embraced that and done a great job. He is a much better defensive player than I ever would have thought, you know, now that I've seen him on an everyday basis for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. He obviously has tremendous power, which we've just talked about, 24 home runs, and he had some comments this week about, you know, thinking he maybe should have been in the home run derby and some of the other guys shouldn't have.
Right.
And then he's been really, and Kevin Cash will tell you this, Bill, I mean, that besides the defense, besides the offense, Logan Morrison has been an incredible team leader for them as well.
That's great. Corey Dickerson, another guy who's having another great year.
Yeah, and he came over and, you know, traded from Colorado before last season, traded for Jake McGee with a couple prospects going each way. And, you know, the Rays saw it as they were getting a guy, you know, it's hard to pay for power in their situation because usually, you know, guys don't show it early, and when they develop it later, they're too expensive for the Rays to get. So they try to find guys who they think might have power. This was a guy who actually had shown it in the big leagues. They were able to get him in this trade, and you know, similar to Logan Morrison, Corey Dickerson had a rough adjustment to the American League. They were asking a lot of him, a young player, and he was basically going to have to play, you know, a new league, face new pitchers, and American League East pitchers, which people over here always think are the best pitchers in baseball, tougher than the National League West or any other division. He was going to have to play at sea level, which no matter how you look at, you know, every player, there is a bump for playing in Coors Field. So he had to face that question. And then he had to face the question of being the DH. He hadn't really done that in his career, and that was a tough adjustment for him too. So all those things kind of led to a kind of a down first half, and Corey Dickerson started changing a lot of things and doing a lot of things differently, and then kind of locked in the second half. And then when the Rays changed hitting coaches, for whatever reason, he made a better connection with Chad Mottola than he did with Derek Shelton. And it really took off for him the last month of last year. And then this year, just obviously been one of the American League's best. And it's a significant accomplishment to be voted in as an all-star as a Tampa Bay Ray. It's only the fifth time it's happened in 20 years for a player from the Rays or the Devil Rays to win the fan vote. And Corey Dickerson deserves all the credit for the season he had to get enough attention out there to be elected.
As we get to the second half, what would you like to see the Rays improve on?
Well, I think the biggest thing for the Rays, Bill, is going to be the bullpen. I mean, Alex Colome has done a really good job the last week or so. He's been kind of in a little bit of a funk, and you know, not too much concern here, but they've been piecing this bullpen together all year. Now, getting Brad Boxberger back from the DL, he's pitched twice since he's been back, and I think that's, you know, the potential to be a big piece. I know in spring training, I specifically remember a day where Kevin Cash was talking to us out on one of the backfields about, and I asked him about Boxberger, and he said they view him as, you know, to pair with Colome and be one of those two-headed monster bullpens that you see a lot of teams have. And then Boxberger got hurt within a, you know, week or so or two after that, and, you know, just now is getting healthy again back out here. But his two outings have been impressive, and the Rays are, you know, kind of like that, you know, quiet optimism of hoping that this is going to be the guy. But they still need to get some more help. I mean, Tommy Hunter's pitched well. Jumbo Diaz has been kind of up and down. You know, we've talked about the lefty they're piecing it together with. But they've been shuffling some other parts in that bullpen, and that's probably, if you're going to say what area do they have to improve the most, they probably need to go get a veteran reliever somewhere along the way here.
So that was my next question. The trade deadline is coming up, so you see them going after relief pitching?
I think so, and you know, I don't know that, you know, looking at their team on the field, I mean, getting Wilson Ramos back, another guy you're obviously very familiar with, and, you know, about 3 weeks earlier than anticipated from his knee surgery. I mean, he's been playing every day now just about, and they're really excited with him. You know, Morrison at first. They've got, you know, Tim Beckham at second and Brad Miller coming off the DL, so he'll be back shortly. Echevarria at short with Beckham available, Longoria. And then, you know, this outfield has been a little bit thick. I mean, they did sign Colby Rasmus, and he played well for a while, but he's been on the DL now. They don't really seem to have a sense when he'll be back. But, you know, so maybe they could use another bat somewhere in there, but I think they've got enough position players at this point. I think the question is just going to be the bullpen for me, and at least looking at the trade deadline. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of rumors because they've got so much starting pitching. The other big question for them is Alex Cobb is pitching really, really well, but he's also a free agent at the end of the year, and the Rays traditionally don't let free agents walk, and they try to get something back for him. But he's also been one of their best starting pitchers, and they're in the race, so that's kind of presents a tough quandary.
And final question, will the Rays ever get their new stadium?
Well, I heard they're waiting for it to be called Bill Ladson Field with a donation, like a real private donation there, and that's going to take care of things. No, I mean, it's been a very long effort, obviously, and Steve Sternberg, the principal owner, has been the driving force in trying to get this to happen and working. You know, they were talking just to St. Pete, then they negotiated a deal where the St. Pete people allowed them a 3-year window to talk to the Tampa side. So, you know, that would allow them to stay in the area, but if it meant moving across the bridge, they would do that. The St. Pete people obviously were confident that the Rays would come back to them. It's supposed to be headed toward conclusion. I mean, Stu Sternberg's been on the record as saying they expect by the end of this year to announce where they think is, you know, the best site for them. And then, you know, obviously, the deal still has to be worked out. I'm sure they're going to do a lot of that negotiating before they make the announcement because they're smart business people and they make millions of dollars by knowing how to do those kind of things. But, yeah, so I think, you know, in these next, you know, 3, 4, or 5 months, we're going to hear some more about this. But, you know, the reality is they've been in St. Pete the whole time. They've had a good product at times. They've had good TV ratings. They've had good web numbers, good radio ratings, but they have not been able to figure out the key to get better attendance there. So whether that leads them to try the Tampa side of the market, but it's a big market. I know I've talked to the commissioner about this several times, as I'm sure you guys have as well, and he says they remain confident Tampa Bay is a viable market for baseball and can be a success. They just need to get the stadium figured out.
Mark Tompkin, he's one of the best baseball writers. Listen, thank you so much.
All right, you got it, Bill, anytime.
Take care.
My final guest is Ken Gernick of MLB.com. He explains why the Dodgers need help before the non-waiver trade deadline. Enjoy the podcast.
On the phone is Ken Gernick. He's the Dodgers beat writer for MLB.com. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, anytime, Bill. Good to talk to you.
Ken, you know, I know the Dodgers were going to be a good team. There's no question. But I didn't think they were going to be this good. What's impressed you the most about the Dodgers this year?
Well, I think two things, really, is you got the overall depth that they have because they basically have a 40-man roster. Of course, everybody has a 40-man roster, but they've got 40 guys that they use. So they move them in and out. They take advantage of the kind of lax roster rules now that they've got a 10-day DL. And so they float a lot of players in and out. They keep them fresh. They fill in for injured players. There isn't that big of a drop-off. Along the same lines, I guess the second thing would be Cody Bellinger. Nobody expected him to do what he's doing this quickly. He was brought up kind of in an emergency fill-in situation when they had a bunch of injuries. And, you know, now he's put himself, you know, if not just the rookie of the year front runner, but, you know, he could be an MVP type candidate if he keeps it up and they keep it up. So I guess those would be the two things, the depth and Bellinger's kind of meteoric arrival.
I know that Bellinger was with the team during spring training. When you saw him during that time, did you think he would have an impact?
He was horrible in spring training. He did not have a good spring training. Struck out a lot and seemed to be overmatched. What do I know? You know that, but that's what we saw in spring training. You know, and you know, he said at the end that he wasn't that worried, that he was working on making some adjustments, and he went down the first 3 weeks at AAA, and he made those adjustments and put them to use, and was hitting well down there, and came up and just took off as soon as he arrived, and he's just he's been their best power hitter, you know, arguably the best power hitter in the game since he showed up. But we didn't see any of that in spring training.
Wow. What's impressed me is that this guy can go the other way as well. I mean, I'm impressed by the way he's played the game. And what do you see his position, first base or the corner outfield, when it's all said and done?
I would say long-term, probably first base, but he definitely can play the outfield, and more than just play it, he's a good outfielder.
Wow.
He's got a powerful arm, and it's accurate. I mean, he's a real good ball player. You know, he's athletic, he's smooth, he's really smooth around the bag, first base. He knows how to play both. I mean, he's been playing since he was a little kid, you know, his dad being in the big leagues. So he could do either. But first base is his natural position. He took on outfield in the minor leagues because they said it might, you know, there could be an opening, give him a little flexibility, versatility, and it might get him to the big leagues faster, and it truly did.
Right.
But I think long-term, he's always been viewed as the successor to Adrian Gonzalez, and it just looks like it's happening faster than anyone really expected.
Wow. You know, we know about Clayton Kershaw, but the rest of the pitching staff is not bad, and it's led by, with Alex Wood there. Could you talk about the rest of the pitching staff?
Well, Wood's having his breakthrough season. You know, he's unbeaten, and that's even with you know, a brief time on a DL and coming off elbow surgery last year. So this again is even far beyond what anybody expected. Although he had a couple good years in Atlanta. So it's not a total shock that he'd be effective, but I don't think anybody expected to see him putting up Kershaw-like numbers that he's been doing. Mm-hmm. But he's made some mechanical adjustments. He actually made them last year and started coming on when the elbow injury, it was a minor operation, a cleanup, but it interrupted the season. And he then had to go into the bullpen at the end of the year because he wasn't built up to go back into the rotation. But he worked hard during the offseason, and he came in, you know, ready to go, and he's been lights out, even though he really, out of spring training, he was considered more of a reliever just because they had numbers, and a lot of their guys came back healthy after last year's injuries. But he quickly moved into the rotation. It looks like he's there to stay. The big question with him is, will he be durable enough to make it through a whole season and pitch into the postseason and pitch effectively. That's something he's never done, you know, and so that's the question with him. And you could say that's a question with Rich Hill. That's really the question with everybody beyond Kershaw is, you know, they've been really good in June, and here we are in July, but what are they going to be in September and October? And that's, you know, we're just going to have to play out the season to see.
With the trade deadline coming up, what kind of moves do you see them making? Do you see them trying to get a starting pitcher or another hitter?
Yeah, they absolutely need another starting pitcher. You know, they were counting on Julio Urias to be strong and help them down the stretch and into October the way he did last year. He's now lost for the year with shoulder surgery. So that leaves a big hole of somebody that they were expecting to step up in the second half. So they're looking for a replacement for that type of pitcher. And, you know, they're not easy to find, obviously. They'll have to either take a salary dump from somebody that is looking to get out from under a heavy contract, which isn't really the Dodger way with this new mentality and the new front office. I'm sure they would love to recreate an Alex Wood-type acquisition who they got 2 years ago, somebody with a big upside who's controllable and young. You know, it just depends on who's available out there, but I'd be shocked if they didn't come up with a legitimate starting pitcher that they feel can help them right through October.
The way this team is going now, Ken, and they have the best record in the National League, do you think they can go far in the postseason? I mean, it sounds like they really need some more help before they can even think about the World Series.
Yeah, I think that they would probably feel that they need, you know, another starter. I mean, Rich Hill, when at his best, is definitely that guy. But with his history of injuries and most recently blisters, again, this is July, and they don't know what to expect from him in September and October. So that's really what they need. They need that number two or number three starter to help them in the postseason. And they're not sure if Ryu or Maeda or some of the guys that they have now in the rotation are going to be that type of pitcher to win games in October, which is they've run into that for the last 4 years. You know, they've finished first place the last 4 years in this division, and they haven't been able to get to the promised land. And a big reason is that the pitchers, you know, not only after Kershaw, but, you know, even Kershaw struggled at times in the postseason.
That's
so
right.
Pitching, obviously, is their number one focus, and that's why I would expect that they'll have to come up with somebody by the deadline.
Do you think the offense could continue the way it is now? You know, do you think it could take them far with what they have?
Well, I think their offense is probably as deep as it's been in many years right now. Assuming that that the young players, you know, Seager and Bellinger can continue this over the course of the full season. We've already seen Seager do it. We haven't seen Bellinger do it. But it doesn't look like he's shown any signs of slowing down. If they stay healthy, you know, if Justin Turner can stay healthy, sure. But I think that they would love to get an outfielder because, you know, they've been getting kind of surprising performances from Chris Taylor in the outfield. But, you know, the outfield is where they lost Andre Ethier and they lost Andrew Toll. So they're really down two significant players out there. And, you know, with Puig, you never really know what you're getting. And Peterson has done most of his damage against right-handed pitching. So, you know, they could use a solid right-handed bat in the outfield.
Do you think Puig will ever reach his potential? It seems like there are days, and I agree with you, Ken, there are days when it looks like, man, this guy is going to be really good, and then other days he's just bad. I mean, do you think he'll ever reach his potential?
I question it just as you do, mainly because we've seen him now for 4 years going on, and he really seems to have plateaued, you know, and he'll show signs, but he doesn't seem to make the breakthrough to get anywhere near the dynamic player that he was when he arrived. So, you know, I think he will be a good everyday ball player, but I don't know if he can be the great ball player that everybody expected him to be.
Right. Interesting. Listen, Ken Gernick, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Bill. Great talking to you.
You got it.